course I'm going to tell them the good news. Why wouldn't I tell them the good news? I like to end the week with good news if I can. And the good news is not found in chapter 16 of the unveiling. The good news is that my Judy Garland poster arrived yesterday. And I was very happy about that. I haven't put it up yet because I don't have a frame, because this is too nice of a poster to tape on the wall. But I'm going to show it to you here. If you're watching on the laundry cam, it's the only way you're going to see this, obviously. But this is Judy in her early MGM years. I'm not sure how old she is here. She's probably somewhere between 17 and 20. Anyway, I'm going to slowly unveil this. This is the unveiling. You ready for this? I love this poster. This is adorable. Here she is, ladies and gentlemen. The one, the only Judy Garland. Look at this. Look at this. How adorable is that? Some would even say beautiful. I would. There we have it. It's a high-quality print from art.com. Art.com, the place to go for all your poster needs of Judy Garland and other people, but who needs anyone else when you have this beautiful girl? And I noticed, I didn't tell you this, when I was going through the symbolism behind the introduction to my show, there's one part I forgot to mention, that quick clip of me talking a mile a minute in the bunker with the red lighting and the poster in the background. I just realized this really is Judy Garland in The Wizard of Oz. How perfect is that? Because to me, they're looking for, in The Wizard of Oz, I'm always referencing this movie, it really fits with the unveiling. They're looking for a place beyond this life. You remember in the beginning of the movie, it's black and white, and there's trouble. Judy's aunt and uncle don't understand her. The farmhands are rather rude with her. Of course, when they become the Scarecrow and the Tin Man and the Cowardly Lion, they're nicer in Oz. Everything's nicer in Oz, except the Wicked Witch of the West. Now, here's the difference between Oz. I'm making an analogy between Oz coming into the kingdom, right? Because when the tornado takes Dorothy's house away, it lands in Oz. She comes from a black and white world into Technicolor. And this was the first film, really one of the earliest films that was filmed in Technicolor. But the shock of it is it goes from black and white to Technicolor. And it's just so startling, and it's fantastic. And then you see the city, and it's far off, and they're traveling toward it because all their problems are going to be solved. This is nearly true in the kingdom. The kingdom, not all problems will be solved in the kingdom. We still have death operating. We still have the nations ruled with an iron club. It's a vast improvement on this life. It's Technicolor compared to this black and white world of ours. A couple days ago, I entertained myself by suggesting to you that Somewhere Over the Rainbow would be the anthem of the millennium, and that it would be sung by all the school kids at the beginning of their school day. The lyrics would be put on all the government buildings. I think this is plausible. And I said that it would be sung before criminals were executed in the Valley of Gehenna. And I looked up the lyrics of this song, and there's a teaching moment here, because I think the lyrics are appropriate to the new earth, not the millennium. Remember, there's a difference. The millennium is 1,000 years on this earth. After that's over, Satan is loosed for a little bit of time at the end. Then he's relegated to the lake of fire. And he's locked up during the millennium. So the difference is the wicked witch of the West runs amok during the movie until she's melted at the end. In that sense, Oz does not quite measure up analogously to the millennium. But when the witch melts at the end by water, not by fire, it's very interesting, though. She uses fire to intimidate the Scarecrow. In fact, sets him on fire in one of the last scenes of the film. He's put out by Dorothy, who douses him with water and inadvertently douses the witch. She melts. This, to me, more perfectly fits the dawn of the new heavens and the new earth. Now, if this song, Somewhere Over the Rainbow, would to become the anthem of the millennium, would it, were it to become, I'm going to recommend this when I get to my place and when I start having a say in matters of celestial universal importance, I'm going to bring this topic up with our Lord. I'll probably have to go through Paul, then the Lord, chain of command, talk to Paul first, my suggestion that Somewhere Over the Rainbow be used. And I think when they see my thinking in this, they'll go along with it. Here are the lyrics, and this is why I say that if a criminal were to hear this song right before their execution, I think it would give them a hope and an expectation of a coming life, because we know that some will stand at the great white throne, and some will go to the second death, others will go to the new earth, somewhere over the rainbow, way up high. There's a land I've heard of once in a lullaby. All right, that's the Wizard of Oz. We're looking at facts here. There's a land. There is a land. There is a land. This is a literal, the new earth is going to be literal as the millennium. Somewhere over the rainbow, skies are blue. You know that? Blue sky is a magnificent thing. The rainbow itself was God's promise that he would not again flood the earth, but he didn't say he wouldn't burn it up. Little detail there. You have to read the fine print. Didn't say I wouldn't burn it up. I just said I wouldn't mess it up destroy it with a flood anymore. But the skies are blue, and we know that there's a giant, this earthquake. This is scriptural here. The earthquake at the end of chapter 16 of the unveiling is going to, many think, I've heard Bollinger and A.E. Nock say this, right the earth. The earth is now tilted at a 23-degree angle, and this takes away the blue skies over the rainbow because the earth is tumultuous because of this. It's tilted, the poles are cattywampus, and as the earth swings around the sun, we have these different seasons and air masses are colliding, and there are tornadoes. Just ask Dorothy about that, and it's calamitous. Now, but the dreams that you dare to dream really do come true. This is not just a dream. Read Hebrews. In Hebrews, it's almost like Paul is unveiling for the Hebrews a dream world. He's saying that there's a entrance into the kingdom that is superlative. There is a land far off. They look for a country, he says. They are expatriates, all these wretched people upon the earth being blown about by every wind of teaching and every wind of tornado. And they are looking. They are expatriates here. They are not worthy to be counted among the citizens. They're mistreated. They're abused. They're starved. They're sawn. They're beaten. But they look ahead. They look ahead to a faraway land that they're going to come into where dreams really do come true. Dare to dream. But here's the thing. The difference is this is not a dream, it's a reality. Someday I'll wish upon a star. You don't need that. You have the scriptures. Wake up where the clouds are far behind me. Digging that. And the criminals, ready to be thrown into the ditch of Gehenna, they're going to latch onto this, where troubles melt like lemon drops. That will be restful music to their souls. They're paying their debt to society. And because they're paying their debt to society, it could be that their names are written on the Lamb's Book of Life at the Great White Throne. Talking now about criminals, this may seem like a shock to some of you. I'll slow down a little bit. Who think that the 1,000 years, the millennium, is heaven. It's not. It's a nice setup here on earth, but it's not perfect. That's why we have criminals. Read Isaiah 66. Corpses of the mortals of those who are executed during the millennium. Iron Club rule, I remind you. Things keep improving. It's a vast improvement, the millennium is, over Eon 3. But Eon 5, which comes after the millennium, which is Eon 4, is vastly superior to the millennium. I love it when that happens. Troubles will melt like lemon drops way above the chimney tops. That's where you'll find me. And we're going to be way above the tumult, way above the chaos, way above any swirling whirlwinds, hurricanes, tornadoes, dust devils. I don't care what they are. We're going to be far above them, as higher than radar, higher than satellites. Yet those satellites that take pictures of hurricanes, satellites are like, yeah, man, we ain't, We're way above the hurricane. And they're taking pictures of the hurricane. They're all up there in space where it's nice and still and quiet. And the hurricane looks so pretty from outer space, but it's a raging, roiling, wave-tossing, swirling mass of watery chaos and wind. Did I mention wind? No? I meant to. Somewhere over the rainbow, bluebirds fly. Bluebirds will still be around in the millennium, and I do believe they will be, I do believe they'll be in the 50, and I do believe that bluebirds will be in the 50 eon. If birds fly over the rainbow, why can't I? Yes, birds, happy little bluebirds, why can't I? There we go. Now, I'm happy about that. It's a great start to the end of the week here. Let me see if I have some notes. I have other things I wanted to share with you. The pain. I'm honestly going to stop talking about Judy Garland. I'm just fixated on this now, kind of. But I'm using it to teach. I saw a television movie based on her early years at MGM, and you know, her father died at age 12, and that really messed her up. Her father wasn't 12. She was 12 when her father died. She was very close to her father. Her mother was one of those stage mothers, pushing her into show business. She was in vaudeville at age of like 4, singing at age 2. So she had a lot of pain in her life. And in this television movie, she was getting ready to record the soundtrack for Somewhere Over the Rainbow. But she was having a very bad day. And her father had just died. Her mother was pushy. The studio was probably already giving her pills to keep her awake and then pills to help her go to bed. And she said in this television movie, the actress playing her, obviously not Judy, "I don't know if I can do this. I don't know." They're tuning up the orchestra, getting ready to record Somewhere Over the Rainbow, the soundtrack that would be used in the film. And who was it? There was a pianist who was a confidant and who really encouraged her and who accompanied her on many of her songs all during her career. I can't think of his name right now, but in the film, in this television movie, he comes up to her and he says, "I know you don't want to do this, and I know that you're going through a lot right now. I mean, we have the orchestra here, but we can send them home. We can try this again tomorrow. But Judy, instead of hiding your pain, instead of keeping it inside, why don't you use this song as a vehicle to communicate it, to communicate your longing to countless people? Instead of hiding it, use it, confront it, and put it behind your voice into this song." And I thought that was profound. And that's exactly what Judy Garland did. She put all the pain into her art. That's why it was so real. That's why it was so honest. That's why we can listen to it and cry, because she communicates it. And I have done this same thing many times. And I say this to recommend it to you also. We're so afraid. You've heard me say this before, but here's another opportunity to teach this. We're so afraid that when we're weak and when we're discouraged and when we're just awful people, that we're of no use to Christ. That is so not true. In fact, it's just the opposite. Because Paul says that when I am weak, then I'm powerful. I saw a beautiful example of it in that television movie. Judy's friend and confidant was telling her, when you're weak, then you're powerful. Don't wait until you overcome your weakness in order to sing, to speak, to testify to the truth of God, as I'm telling you now. Don't wait. Don't stay home. Go out. I was in a really down mood yesterday, but I went out and I went to the store and there was a woman at the cash register. And she was a vibrant person, and I connected with her, and I cheered her up, and she cheered me up. Because I used whatever I was going through, and I took it into the world, and I didn't try to hide it, I didn't condemn it, I challenged it to be changed. And by change, I mean when you take it and put it out. When Judy decided to sing that song and bring the wistfulness out, bring the sadness out, it transformed those who listened to it, which turned around and transformed her. This has happened to me too. People have told me, Martin, that talk you gave on such and such a date, it was amazing, changed my life. And I go back and I say, what talk was that? And I realized that that was the talk where I was going through misery. I was suicidal. But I went and stood up in front of the microphone anyway. And I gave out of my pain. I didn't try to clean myself up. I didn't try to change. I didn't try to be a perfect Christian. I went for it. And that came back to me. And it in turn blessed me when I got into the mix. When I got into the mix in spite of everything. Look, Christ has already saved us in spite of everything. We are saved by Him, have been saved by Him in our worst moments. Now, He transmutes everything. He takes all our worst moments. And if we're brave enough to go out into the world, not to hide it, to express it, and trust God that He is going to package it, and He is going to add a spoonful, to borrow from another movie, a spoonful of sugar, a spoonful of the Spirit of God, and animate that thing, then the Spirit of God, in conjunction with our pain, can change not only us, but the world.